Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Warning, despite movie titles to the contrary, God is dead.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new fast food chicken restaurant for sexual deviants, Chick-fil-Atio, where godless perverts go to wolf down cock. Chick-fil-Atio, because we don't want you degenerates and homos eating at our other restaurants. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
It is now a criminal offense, according to the Supreme Court of the United States. It is now a punishable offense. You can be fined for being a Christian in the United States of America.
What you just heard may to some seem quite unintelligible, but let me tell you this. As a veterinarian who is well versed in the finer points of canine linguistics, I can say with great assurance that what Sagan just said was that even he knows that we, in fact, evolved from filthy monkey men and women.
It's Thursday.
It's April 10th.
And normally black people are way cooler, but the oversized hat with no curve and the sticker on the inside of the brim, that was a cultural misstep.
Yeah, I'm no illusions.
I'm Heath Enright, and from America's G-Spot, New York, New York.
And America's unpopped boil, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
On this week's episode, a Polish priest will notice the Lego brick road to atheism.
We'll discuss Heath's balls.
And we'll learn that God hates gay corporations, too.
But first, the diatribe. Another person tells me how religion helps people cope with death, I'm going to kick them in the nuts. And if it's a woman or a eunuch, I will surgically attach nuts to them just so I can kick them. So my best friend lost his mother a couple of weeks ago, and I've been writing this diatribe in my head ever since. I wanted to talk about it a couple episodes back, but when you're friends with somebody for 25 years, you get pretty close to their whole family, and I just didn't trust myself to get through it until now. See, I was with him when he got the call. She had a massive stroke while she was out shopping, and after a few very difficult days in ICU, she passed. And I don't think my friend would mind me saying he was a mama's boy. They were extremely close. Needless to say, he was devastated. He is devastated. And then here's my godless ass standing next to him while he gets this information, and I've got nothing to say. You know, all at once I saw the utility of those grief platitudes that religious people have, all the, I'll pray for you, she's in a better place, God has a plan, all that bullshit. Because in the moment, when somebody you love is going through the worst pain in their life, you want to make it better. But there's nothing that you can say that's going to make it hurt less. All I could say is, dude, I'm so sorry, and if you need anything, I'm here. But that's useless in the moment. Because one way or the other, losing your mom is agony, and there's no magical combination of words that alleviates it. But as it turns out, there are plenty of combinations of words that exacerbate it. Ever since his mom died, the faith vultures have just been circling around him. And it's not just these hollow banalities about how his mom's now with her favorite puppy or how God needed an angel but somehow couldn't just fashion one of his own. He's got getting plenty of that shit, and I'm sure it's driving him nuts, but it's nowhere near as egregious as all the people who are trying to springboard his personal tragedy into evangelical opportunity. Now, for the record, I know that these people are ultimately well-intentioned in their own minds. You know, none of them are rubbing their hands together going, excellent, he's at his weakest, grab the crucifix and get him. You know, they're all trying to help. They're telling him that he should, you know, go to their church, he should pray with them, he should submit to God, because they honestly think that that shit will make things better. It doesn't occur to them how pissed off they would be if a bunch of Muslims were trying to convert them at their mother's funeral. You know, they've been told a million times that the only thing that'll make mortality bearable is Jesus, so they're trying to give him Jesus. But just because something's well-intentioned doesn't mean it's forgivable. This isn't a buddy who keeps his atheism close to his chest or anything. It's tattooed on his fucking body. He's a vocal non-believer, and most of the people who are trying to guilt him back to church know this good and damn well. So not only does he have to deal with all the grief and misery that comes with losing his favorite person, he also has to keep his bullshit shield constantly at the ready. And believe it or not, it gets even worse. He was having a lot of trouble and wanted to talk to somebody, so he set out to find a psychologist he could chat with. This guy's got a lot more pride than money, so this was a tough thing for him to do. He's not the kind of person who easily opens up to a complete stranger, so I'm sure it was really hard for him to muster the willpower to even walk in the door. And within 5 minutes, the fucking therapist was telling him how Jesus could Jesus that pain away if he'd just Jesus. You know, I made him aware of the Secular Therapy Project when he told me about this, and we're trying to find some help for him, but Secular Therapy doesn't have much of a presence in South Georgia, and the whole time we're hunting, he's not getting help. So sure, I guess in a technical sort of way, death is easier to deal with when you're religious, but that's only because you don't have to put up with all the proselytizing cockhammers. It's like spiritual extortion. It's not that the religious people don't have to deal with grief, they just don't have to deal with religious people.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is gracefully aging Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to talk about the coefficient of testicular expansion?
I'm only 32 years old, and I already accidentally teabagged my first toilet bowl. Unbelievable. Like, scrubbing bubbles, like, the whole way, fully. So, ladies, you know, if you're into ball size, talk to me. Talk to me. I'm your guy.
Wow. That might be the most disturbing image we've ever opened with. Anyway, in our lead story tonight, the internet is killing God. A recent study by Professor Alan B. Downey at the Olin College of Engineering provides yet more evidence of something that both atheists and theists probably already knew. There's a strong correlation between internet use and non-belief.
No way! So yeah. More information equals less belief in God. Basically, Al Gore created the atheist superhighway, and you're all going to be extinct soon, just like Darwin said you would. Eat it.
There you go.
Fantastic.
The data set Downey used suggests that internet use may be a stronger factor in the loss of belief than education or even the religiosity of one's parents. He does concede that it's, quote, not impossible to imagine plausible reasons why disaffiliation might cause increased internet use, end quote. And while I'm sure the sudden lack of masturbatory prohibitions that motivates many newly minted atheists contributes, Professor Downey and I agree that most of the correlation's probably going the other way.
For me, it's almost impossible to find God left-handed.
No kidding.
But seriously, given all the information available on the internet, there's more evidence of Chuck Norris being omnipotent than any religious god. So
this adds to mountains of existing data that suggest the same. And I think it's worth noting that the most common causal explanation here is, like you said, access to information. Now, that seems obvious to atheists, but I think it's worth just bringing that up for religious folks time to time. The more access to information people have, the less likely they are to agree with you.
That's pretty damning. And in Montreal, Canadian puckhead news, the Parti Québécois, or Quebecois Party, put their notorious rednecky spin on what could have been reasonable secular legislation when they proposed a set of laws that would allow public sector employees to be fired if they refused to comply with regulations banning non-essential headwear, such as all religious headwear.
Shit, they can have my pasta strainer when they pry it from my cold, dead hands.
Obviously, most employees in most jobs can clearly serve their function with or without a specific hat, so these legislators are just being white xenophobic assholes. Trust me, we can smell our own. That being said, if you're so irrational that you can't go 8 hours at work without your tinfoil helmet, you're not qualified to work to register at McDonald's. Right. You have to wear a paperboat hat there.
Admittedly, I'm a middle-aged, long-haired, white dude in South Georgia, so maybe it's no surprise that I side with the rednecky, spin, xenophobic side. But fuck you and your magic hat. I'm against all laws that make accommodations for people's religion. That's my
thing. But let's not keep this all in context. As always, we're dealing with Canada here. Mm-hmm. Big hockey pulls the strings behind all the decisions. So I'm guessing this must be a response to like a Muslim goalie made some sort of unfair turban-related save. I don't know.
And in F is for Faith news tonight, the Secular Coalition for America issued their annual congressional report card last week, and to the surprise of nobody, American legislators suck at secularism. More than 60% of House members failed by the SCA standards, with a pathetic 36% graded C or above.
Was there any indication, by the way, which major party, if any, was particularly horrible for societal progress, or were both parties about equally logical, as one would hope, in a two-party system?
No. Surprise, surprise, as it happens, only about 0% of Republicans are included in that C or above category, with a whopping 0.49% of Republicans scoring above F.
So it rounds down to 0%.
Right.
If you round to the nearest 1%.
Anyway, the Senate scored significantly better, proving once again that the Senate is an ugly chick blessed with a much uglier friend.
Right, the congressional mascot theory, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Does shutting down the entire legislative process in a hissy fit over letting black people have health care count for extra credit? Or does that is that horrible and unchristian and therefore bad for the score? I'm not sure how they tabulate that. Anyway, there's a state called Idaho News. Christian parents in Idaho decided to keep the cycle of sheltered ignorance going by insisting that the state's largest school district ban a multi-award-winning book because it contains several direct references to reality and other such dangerous ideas.
Yeah, see, to me, that is religion's biggest tell. As a science-minded person, I encourage everybody to look at what the other side has to say. You know, by all means, go listen to Ray Comfort and Ken Ham. If anything
Please.
Those babbling fucks have to say changes your mind, we didn't want you in our club anyway.
Obviously, they haven't considered what reading lists look like if the atheist gets to remove every book with the word God or faith, so that would be ridiculous too. Regardless, I'm thinking we brainstorm some titles for the Zealot reading list.
Okay.
So 30 seconds on the clock. Fundamentalist-friendly novel rewrites. Go.
All right. To Kill a Mocking Cartoonist.
Nice. Wow. Good start.
Thank you.
Little Women's Rights.
Yeah, just a little.
Very, very little.
Crime and Capital Punishment.
Nice work. I was thinking Sex, Crime, and No Punishment.
Oh, nice. That's better.
Same line. What about Stranger Than Crucifixion?
Women in Love, but not with each other.
No, of course not. Of course not. How about One Shade of White? One pale shade of white.
Lady Chatterley's Monogamous Relationship. That's my last D.H. Lawrence one. I'll move on.
I heard Pride and Prejudice was the working title for the Pentateuch at one point. Then they were calling it the Divine Comedy. Finally settled on Torah.
So. Nice. And, of course, Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Misanthrope, which was the 7th best-selling atheist book on the Kindle store last time I checked, but could probably use some more reviews. And in warning, this science may contain science news tonight. A museum in San Mateo, California has bowed to pressure from rational humans this week and removed a disclaimer that warned patrons that their live animal show, quote, may discuss the topic of evolution. That's right. A fucking science museum in the conservative enclave, by the way, of the San Francisco Bay felt the need to warn patrons that their presentations might have true stuff in them.
What type of creationist is going to the science museum anyway?
Right.
Like snarky, hipster, Bible college students taking ironic pictures in front of this so-called science museum. You guys want to go get still sober and go to the science museum? Running away, laughing, pushing each other into the bushes. Nobody's doing that.
Amen. Now, to their credit, the museum removed the disclaimer quickly after they started getting feedback from science advocates and explained that it only showed up there in the first place because some Christian turd worm complained when their kids' sensitive ears were corrupted by the blasphemous proclamations of Satan. They didn't say turd worms, but I can read between the lines. I know it.
Turd worm in the subtext, very clearly.
Exactly.
No missing it. And in Sunday mass genocide news, it's the 20th anniversary of the tragic massacre in Rwanda, in which nearly a million members of the Tutsi tribe were killed by the rival Hutu militia for having differing historical religious beliefs. Please note and applaud the serious voice and lack of sarcasm thus far.
Yeah, no kidding. As soon as you brought it up, my inbox started cringing in anticipation.
Been very professional, but we'll get there. If an indictment for genocide, extermination, murder, and rape by the United Nations is any indication, it seems Father Wenceslas Munyashiaka was heavily complicit in the extermination campaign. Apparently, international prosecutors have not yet been able to locate his secret hideout, which is the medieval church in Gisors, France, about an hour northwest of Paris, where he is a fully practicing priest.
Jesus. Yeah, it should be a lot harder than that to find war criminals on Google Maps.
Indeed it should.
And finally tonight, and well, I do say goddammit when I step on them news, Polish priest Sławomir Kostrzyzuła warned parents during a Lent service that the desolate one had discovered a new tool to lure the souls of their unsuspecting children into the womb of darkness. In addition to fame, lust, wealth, and sick guitar riffs, the devil has now added interlocking plastic building blocks to his arsenal.
So, according to Christianity, Lego should soon beat out bag o' glass, throat clogger uppers, and gas power truck thing to top SNL's list of most dangerous toys. We should see that one.
Johnny Switchblade.
Next episode.
Kostrzyzuła recommends that Catholic priests, in fact, give up on Lego altogether and instead rely on Duplo Box or Kinects to lure children into their unmarked vans.
This is the same guy, by the way, that connected Hello Kitty to, quote, violence and the pornography industry, end quote. So what I want to know is what kind of fucked up Asian kiddie porn this guy watches. And what's the website?
Oh, jeez.
Boing! That was the satire that was, yeah, sound effect, ladies and gentlemen, again.
Yeah,
so,
he wasn't really. Yes. Please don't send us links. Thanks to Kostrzyzuła's vigilance, we now know that the evil one is infiltrating the toy industry. So as a public service announcement for Polish paranoia, and because fuck it, there are no rules, I propose we put 30 more seconds on the clock. Satanic versions of popular children's toys. Go.
All right, let's do it. That's nice. Raggedy Antichrist.
Fake projectile vomit.
Where in the underworld is Carmen Sandiego?
Finger me Elmo. Hard to get well, your hands on that one.
Also, Luciferby.
How about Barbie's Malibu Dream Bodega?
Playmobil Zebub?
Crack in the box, maybe. Get them started early.
What about Mephistopheles E-Bake Oven?
Nice.
For baking the crack, for the crack in the box.
How about Demonopoly?
As board games. What about Pascal's Risk?
Nice.
That's dangerous.
And, of course, they always love the Cabbage Patch abortions, those Satanists.
Wow. Right. And you can carry those in the baby Stillbjorn. So that's nice. They have an accessory. To easily
you actually made that worse, dude. Wow. That's
stems.
You know, that's probably also the most disturbing image that we've ever closed on, too. So congratulations, dude, for two tonight.
That well of dead baby jokes does not dry up, does it? I mean, somebody's refilling it, I guess. That's weird. But that's amazing. It works.
And when we come back, we'll say more disturbing shit.
We will.
It's time for the Atheist Calendar portion of the show. This is the occasional few minutes we set aside to talk up some of the great atheist, secular, and skeptical meetups going on around the country and around the world. I'm guessing if you haven't already booked your shit for the Freethought Festival, Nexus, or American Atheists Annual Convention, it's probably too late to talk you into that, and I believe that all the free tickets for ReasonCon the first weekend of May are claimed, but fear not, as there are still plenty of great conventions this spring you still have time to hit up. If you're bummed that you'll miss ReasonCon, but you'll still be in the North Carolina area, the FFRF's Raleigh Regional Convention is taking place the same weekend, and you guessed it, Raleigh. The lineup of speakers includes Bart Ehrman, which is pretty sweet. That's the weekend of May 3rd. Same weekend, other side of the country, you've got the Orange County Freethought Alliance's conference in California. Christina Rad, Jerry DeWitt, Mikey Weinstein. Holy shit, that sounds fun. Shame I've got equally awesome plans. The third annual Women in Secularism conference is coming up May 16th through the 18th, just outside of D.C. I've heard a lot of good things about the last two, and this year's lineup includes Ophelia Benson, Debbie Goddard, Susan Jacoby, and a lot more. Tickets are reasonable and available. For our Canadian listeners in or near BC, you've got what I believe is Canada's largest annual Freethought convention, Imagine No Religion in Kamloops. The conference is in its fourth year, and from what I hear, they're getting damn good at it. If you don't believe me, Eugenie Scott, Dan Barker, Andy Laurie Gaylor, Seth Andrews, Jerry Coyne, Jerry DeWitt, Margaret Downey, Hemant Mehta, Daryl Ray. Do I have to go on? Because I could. Anyway, should be awesome. Of course, you'll find more information for all of these events on the show notes for this episode at scathingatheist.com. And remember, there's no charge or anything for getting your events listed on the show. Send me an email and I'll be happy to plug it. And if you haven't been to an atheist convention yet, well, to be perfectly honest, neither have I, so I can't give you any shit for it. But that being said, I'm changing that in May, and I strongly encourage you to do the same.
Time to time, Noah and I like to kick back, relax, and let our listeners do all the heavy lifting by sending in emails laden with insight, thought-provoking questions, and or dick jokes.
So with a bit of feedback piling up and a couple extra minutes in this week's show, here's a long overdue bit of audience feedback.
Yeah, how's the intro coming for this segment, by the way?
It's probably going to be awesome someday.
Fantastic. So our first email comes from a listener named Beth, who needed to call us out for douchebaggery. Beth writes, "Hi, guys. Normally, I really enjoy the show and the satire. I have to call douchebaggery on your comments about Sarah Palin's chromosome-endowed family. Not cool, guys. I am disappointed."
I bet she's not going to appreciate the fact that you laughed during that reading.
No,
so, yeah, as it turns out, jokes about kids with Down syndrome piss people off. Who knew?
So she's offended on behalf of people who never stop smiling. That doesn't make any sense. Does it help, though, that none of the 47 clubbers that listened to the show got that joke or this one? Does that help?
I'm sure whatever you're doing isn't helping. Yeah, no, probably not. No, I did. I emailed Beth back. She's not the first listener that called us out for punching down in our jokes of it, which we do quite often. I'm going to share the I'm not going to share the whole email that I sent back, but this is the meat and potatoes of it. Sorry if we offended you, Beth. I'll be the first to admit that we often get carried away and neither of us have much in the way of a moral compass when it comes to humor. You may have noticed that that was an interjection. That wasn't in the email. We go into every episode knowing that we're going to offend at least a few people and get rightly called out for some douchebaggery. I can't honestly say it won't happen again. If you have lines you don't think should be crossed, it's all but guaranteed that we will eventually cross them. There are a few things we won't joke about, but not many. I make no apologies for the joke. If I thought it was out of bounds, I wouldn't have included it in the show. But for whatever it's worth, I appreciate you letting us know that you disagree. Okay, wait, that was the whole email that I sent back to her. But the point is that, like, if you are offended by something in the show, send me and let me know. And, you know, I won't think you're a prude or a dick, and I won't make fun of you on the air about it and everything. I might not stop joking about it, but let us know.
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm glad somebody was offended by that joke. That's what I'm doing here. So, next email comes from Mark in, let's say, Pittsburgh. And Mark says, "Hey, guys and gal, love the show, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, I was wondering if you guys had considered doing a segment where you go to different churches and review the services. Could be funny."
Mark, we are already reading the fucking Bible, dude. Do you want my blood, too? Shall I bleed for you, my firstborn, perhaps?
And the last time I crossed the threshold into a church, my pant leg burst into flame. So I'm
right.
a little bit worried about that.
He still wears those pants, too. No surprise that last week's diatribe inspired more than a couple emails. A lot of our fans came to Neil deGrasse Tyson's defense, and a couple of them did so by pointing out that a dude who does an atheist show under a pseudonym doesn't get to call anyone out for coming out as an atheist.
Right, because your pseudonym has something to do with the closet logical astronomer's cognitive dissonance?
It sounds damning when they say it, but it's a non sequitur. I'm very clearly doing this show under a pseudonym. Oh. I'm not pretending my name's really No Illusions, and I'm not redefining what name really means to get me there. But more to the general theme of all the feedback I've gotten, the point I'm trying to make is that Tyson is confusing the issue by pretending that one can simultaneously not believe in God and not be an atheist. And in so doing, he's helping to both define and reinforce a negative stereotype of atheists. And if you want to hear this point expressed brilliantly, by the way, listen to his recent interview on the Rationally Speaking podcast, and then just imagine me saying, "I'm No Illusions and I approve this message," after every question that Julia Galef asks him.
Our last email
Fucking love Julia Galef. Dude, she would be sexy even if she couldn't intellectually smack down geniuses, but she can. Damn, that's hot.
You didn't admit to yourself there?
No, I'm married. This will be really quiet.
That's all I ask. Anyway, our last email comes from a rare, incoherent post on Facebook, which says, quote, "If there is no God, what's your purpose in life?"
Yeah, that would be a great question if it was less stupid.
If there is a God, then what's the purpose in life? Entertaining rats for him?
Well, see, now, I submit that a life need not have an overarching purpose to have, like, meaning or have value. So, honestly, the only way to fail to have purpose in life is to dedicate one's life to something that, you know, doesn't exist.
Perfect.
So anyway, that's all the feedback we got for this go-around. If you want to hear this segment more often, send us more shit.
The Lord said unto Moses, "On Egyptians would you pose it? But look at all their noses, and you'll see that you're a Jew. Unto the Lord then replied Moses, just what do you suppose is gonna happen when they know this? Just what am I to do? Well, what it did was end up fleeing. He wound up in Medean, where he found a priest agreeing to give up his daughter's hand. But all the shit he started seeing left him guaranteeing that his purpose would be freeing all the Hebrews in the land. So upon a bush's edict, he headed back to Egypt. He needed his sons, we did, when he wrestled God. But the Hebrews wouldn't dare go, so Moses talked to Pharaoh with his eyes enraged and narrow and both hands on Aaron's rod. He said,
let my people go. But Pharaoh just said no. And fearing it might be so, he tossed down the staff that God empowered. It became a snake, but them Egyptians, man, but he also had magicians. A bolt of their staff started hissing and quickly got devoured. Oh no.
Still the Pharaoh's unimpressed, so he left that grievance unredressed. So as you might guess, the plagues are here and there. Bloody waters soon rise, frogs start falling from the skies. He sends a bunch of gnats and flies, epidemics poisoning hell. But still the Hebrews went unpardoned when God's logos ate the garden. Since the Pharaoh's heart was hardened, Moses needed one last card to play. So with the firstborn lying dead, Pharaoh finally said, take your unleavened bread and go the fuck away. They rejoiced with sounds like thunder when the Pharaoh knuckled under. They grabbed a bunch of plunder, followed smoke that God provided. But soon doubts about the route came out, and Moses the devout was shot. I guess your guy's no Eagle Scout, just look where we've been guided. You see, the Pharaoh sent his men a war in hopes of settling the score. And here the Jews are on the shore, trapped and ripe for slaughter. So Moses, feeling like a schmuck, said, God, I think you got us stuck. It looks like we're completely fucked unless you divide the water well. Little bit of eating manna later, Moses talks to his creator, so he could act as God's translator, cut commandments into stone. And then on the impatient Jews' behalf, Aaron makes golden calf, which they pray to bring in wrath, which little mercy would be shown. Then, starting in chapter 24, we pretty much just discussed decor, despite there being plenty more important things to tackle. Important shit just gets ignored, as we spent the last 16 chapters bored, learning exactly how the Lord wants his tabernacle.
Before we empty the clip tonight, I wanted to let everybody know that the paperback version of our new book is now available. You'll find a link on the show notes for this episode, but it should also be on Amazon by now, if not by tomorrow. Now, that's all the blasphemy we've got for you tonight, but if you want more, there's plenty of it. I participated in a two-part panel discussion on the Imaginary Friend Show this week. By the time this airs, both parts should be available. I was also on the Atheist Nomads podcast this week and had a great chat with Dustin and Wesley over there. Both shows will be linked on the show notes, of course. I can't close the show out without thanking Heath for his continued excellence in the field of phallic humor. I need to thank Lucinda for all the great openings and happy endings, and I need to thank Deb, Vinny, and their four-legged compatriot for providing this week's Farnsworth quote and just being all-around excellent human beings. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most estimable primates, John, Jason, April, William, Ryan, Aaron, Stephen, Andrew, Dennis, Don, Atheist, Miranda, Jennifer, Matthew, Alex, Tim, Zimu, Z, Brad, Neil, Yadio, Andrew, Bart, Scott, and Wayne. John, Jason, April, William, and Ryan, who are so brilliant they cast shadows on light bulbs, Aaron, Stephen, Andrew, Dennis, and Don, whose erections impede satellites, Atheist, Miranda, Jennifer, Matthew, and Alex, whose sexual magnetism baffles juggalos, Tim, Zemo, Z, Brad, and Neil, whom even brevity would concede are the true souls of wit, and Yadio, Andrew, Bart, Scott, and Wayne, each of whom swings enough pipe to demonstrate the Earth's rotation. These 25 insufficiently complimented individuals have augmented their personal legacies this week by giving us money. Only the most helpful, hopeful, noble, Nobel hopefuls have what it takes to give us money, but if you think you share their dedication to future generations, and you want to earn a bunch of really cool bonus shit, you can donate to the show at patreon.com/scathingatheist, or for a one-time donation, click the donate button on the right side of our homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you were just about to donate but your dog ate your PayPal account, you can also help us out for free by leaving us a glowing review on iTunes, as well as liking, subscribing to, circling, and or following us on all those social media sites you know we know you frequent. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at skatingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. A couple of their fuck, man, I'm too stoned. Shit.